Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Incubator Podcast. This is your co-host, Sabir Strand.
And this is Darren Boyd. And today we are going to continue down this observability path. We've got a really exciting guest. We're going to tee up why in a moment from Big Panda. Big Panda is an operational platform. You've probably seen it associated with AI ops in the space. Valued at about $1.2 billion. Really, really interesting player in this market. And representing Big Panda, we've got Aaron Johnson. Now, Aaron Johnson, one of our favorites, he has an incredible set of experience in the not just media companies beyond, but he's worn the hat. He's been a practitioner. He's lived through the pain of observability, and he's got an affinity to Big Panda. He started using it in his career and decided to join the company. So we're really happy to have you, Aaron. He goes by AJ for anybody that knows him well. Thank you for joining the show. And if you don't mind, if you can kind of give us a little bit of an intro to you, because I think your background speaks volumes of how to do observability right. So let me turn it over to you and then we'll get started.
Can you tell AJ he's a big fan?
Big fan. Big.
Yeah, but hopefully I live up to your intro. I am AJ. Built my career last 12 to 15 years, started in the mailroom at Intuit as a contractor, networked my way into their network operations center, became a lead, became a manager. Eventually, I wanted to build a team from the ground up. When I joined Intuit, I think their team was 10 years old or something like that. They'd had a knock for quite a while. And I always thought I could build it a better way, kind of take it to the next level. So eventually left there, followed my boss over to Hulu up in LA, and we built operations from the ground up there. I had some experience in AI ops from Intuit. At the tail end of my career, about the last 2 years, we spent rolling out an AI ops tool. And so I kind of got to see some of the value when it was early on in that industry. And eventually at Hulu, I was able to get budget a year and a half to 2 years in. And we moved from open source Alerta to Big Panda because we needed to make sense of all of the signals we were getting from microservices mm-hmm. that were causing us long outage durations. And so we rolled out AI ops and kind of took ourselves from that crawl stage to maybe jog, you know, kind of skip the walk phase there with the platform in place. And then, you know, eventually got into that run phase where we were then automating things that we did more than once, you know, once we had confidence in these steps, we would work with our engineering teams to automate actions and then respond to the failures of automation rather than the signal that, you know, something needs to be fixed immediately. So that's kind of where I'm coming from the last, you know, 10 to 15 years. And, joined Big Panda because I love the product. And when I was looking for other opportunities outside of Disney streaming and Hulu, Big Panda was just a natural fit. I was already talking to some of their prospective customers. I probably closed deals for them before I was here, not even knowing. And so they courted me, I courted them, and it was just a good fit because I love the product. I call myself like a passionate operations guy, but I'm really a nerd about it in a way that a lot of people don't understand, but I just love problem solving. And, you know, I think in IT ops, there's a lot of common problems and you can solve them different ways depending on like a company's personality and how they operate. But Big Panda is a great platform. I think everyone would benefit from it personally, but yeah, it's not the only one in the space, but definitely my favorite.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Aaron. You mentioned courting. I don't want Darren to continue courting you here. Okay. So he's blushing. And so I'm going to kick this off with a question here. Big Panda, Aaron, we hear event correlation, we hear AI ops, we hear monitoring, we hear observability. Can you help us kind of contextualize where is Big Panda playing in this whole domain? And why it's so important for organizations and enterprises to really pay attention to it and help them really understand operations better and overall.
Yeah, I would say a lot of the things you mentioned are probably what I would call features or functions of Big Panda as a platform. Mm-hmm. It does have some AI, it does have some machine learning, it does have event correlation. We're technically not an observability tool in the sense that like a Datadog or something like that is. We work really well with them though, right? So you would plug in your observability to us And then what Big Panda really does for a frontline operator, incident command, NOC, if you're SRE or DevOps model, it could help you anywhere where you have a ton of data coming in from multiple systems. And then you have to make sense of it to figure out what is actually needed. So in like a traditional ops space, if I had an incident that kicked off 10 alerts, I would be digging through those one at a time to figure out, okay, what's the most likely alert based on, you know, the layer of OSI it's in, right? That's like traditional NOC. With this, you know, event correlation, machine learning and all that, you can actually group those things together in a nice story based on, you know, commonality and payloads. You can extract information from a different part of the payload and create a new tag, things like that. But it really helps to tie like, so a problem I had in my career was we had a front end client and we had back end microservices, and there's maybe 10 hops from initial request to client getting what they need, but we never knew which hop was the problematic one. And so that's about the time we started looking at Big Panda, was how can we stop starting at the client end and work our way back? How can we start at the closest thing to the problem? And so that was essentially the one use case we had to solve, because we were killing our client engineering team. It was almost, you know, some people in the field might hear time to innocence. That's kind of the state we were in, was like, prove it's not you, and then we'll go to the next hop, prove it's not you. With AI ops machine learning, you can go to the most relevant place and say, okay, you are likely the closest thing to it. Prove to me one way or the other it's not you or it is you, and let's take an action, right? Mm-hmm. Another good thing is there's so kind of that correlation. We talk about alert correlation, but there's also a function in Big Panda that was really helpful for me called root cause changes, where we would also correlate alerts and incidents to change records from multiple sources. So you could imagine like ServiceNow or Remedy or a ticketing system like that, maybe Jira, those would have some changes. And then maybe your Jenkins or your orchestration system would have code deployments that don't necessarily go through a CAB and the heavy-handed process. We fed all of those into Big Panda and then correlated those against the incident. So anything that was caused by change, we reduced the time to action by, I want to say, 40 minutes on average, where we could say, hey, this thing happened. Here's a likely deploy change candidate, something like that. Let's go to that person, see if we can roll it back, you know? So yeah. There's a lot of functions that you mentioned, and I know I'm kind of going on a TED talk right now, but but all of those things kind of paint a picture as to what you can do with the platform. And it's all about how do you leverage those functions within how your company operates. So I would say that's the value, but we're not an observability tool. You plug those in, and then we make sense of all of that data, whether it's great or not, right? And then there's also enrichment that I should touch on. So if you have a CMDB or some sort of distributed tracing that you could feed off of to say, this thing is related to this other thing, either up or downstream, Big Panda is able to take that logic into account as well. And you can enrich alerts as it comes in to provide contextual data for an operator who maybe isn't an SME on that service, but you could still give them everything they would need to make sense of it. So that was really the power for me and my team when we made the switch from open source Alerta to Big Panda like, you know, tool.
Yeah. And sorry to cut you off, Darren, if you were going to jump in here, but you know, that is what is so exciting for us and why Darren was blushing earlier, and is because it does all of those things in totality. While it's not a pure play observability tool, it's not a pure play monitoring tool, it actually supports all of those functions, right? So we've been doing a series on observability, and you know, observability platforms or tools have the ability to not only provide state, but have the ability to ask questions and have traceability. And some of the things that you just mentioned is that ability to correlate all of the endpoints or metric signals that come in and have traceability or correlation and context, which does support concepts of observability, even though it's not that pure play tool. So I'll stop and actually turn it back over to Darren since he's calmed down a bit.
First of all, a little clarity. I do get to court whoever I want, and I do put a value premium on folks that are resourceful and scrappy and intelligent and kind of been there, done that. So that's why I love having AJ around. But you also did a mic drop. One of the things we're talking about is why observability isn't necessarily enough. right? We can get very good with certain tools, and we can have product teams that are incredibly great with some of those tool sets and platforms. But once a transaction, and I shouldn't even say once a transaction, but for transactions that transcend those boundaries of products mapped to product teams, you need greater capabilities. You need the enrichment, you need the correlation, et cetera. So that's one thing. So you like, that was the whole take on this is, it isn't about the corollary isn't, what does observability in terms of evolution of monitoring. This is really like, how do we evolve this idea of observability, and something like Big Panda starts to connect that and complete the transaction. Because I think you're also pointing out other things, AJ. And one of the pieces is that Sabir and I work a lot with customers in the field on are beyond things like observability. We get asked things like, hey, how should we approach this idea of resiliency? Mm-hmm. And this is where, again, like you started talking about like code coupling analysis and tying into Jiren and other sources of enrichment, other sources that you can do analysis against. And those are fundamental to beyond root cause analysis and getting to time to innocence. It can extend into architectural patterns, new architectural patterns, concepts of resiliency, et cetera. So I think you are that evolution of so many different ideas. And I wonder if you could, are people starting to use Big Panda to inform on architectural patterns and other things that we just kind of referenced? Or are they still in the phase where, hey, let's get this observability down right, and we're using it there? Though Big Panda can obviously equate to so much more in their space. Where are people right now in terms of adoption?
I think it's a mix. The conversations I hear are either we need to focus on observability first, and then we'll worry about AI ops and machine learning. Or there's people that are like, hey, we just need to get in something that can help us with manpower because we're underwater, right? So I'll give you a couple examples. So the first time I rolled out an AI ops tool, it wasn't Big Panda, but the necessity for it was half of my team was lost in layoffs. So I wasn't thinking like, I want to do next gen ops. I was like, they cut half my team, but not half the workload. I need something to reduce the workload or make sense of what we're looking at quicker so that I have enough people. And we were able to do that. It took about 18 months to get off the ground at that time, but you know, it was kind of new in the industry. What drove the Big Panda side in that scenario was we were having what we called Sev Zero incidents. That was like our highest, you know, stuff hit the fan scenario. And we were having about two of those a week for, I want to say, a month or so. And, you know, these things didn't make the news because it was back end problems, right? So it affected like business to business, not business to customer type of workflows. So customers were fine, right? So it's like in that scenario, you're like, oh, hey, that's great. But there's a second set of customers which are paying for other services the company provides. And we were losing money there in astronomical amounts every week. And so for me, I kept hearing things like, you know, I'm digging in this way from a developer, and then, you know, kind of just writing that down. Oh, he started at this point from this set of alerts. And then we just started going, there's logic here that it feels like if you're doing it manually, we could put a process in place to do it. And so that's kind of what drove that. But I think the thing we didn't worry about initially was how good our observability is, right? We knew we had alerts firing all the time. We knew we had all these tools and signals. What we didn't know was how good they were or how relevant they were. And so, you know, my boss and I were talking about a strategy, and we realized the thing our team couldn't come up with in any incident is what's the symptom, what's the service, and what's the scope of the impact. So that was like the bare minimum we needed to know was the service or services involved. And to me, everything's a service. So when I say service, network is a service. Your Windows operating system, that's a service provided by whoever manages that, you know, OS. So everything is a service. You have to be in a service registry minimum, you know, things like that. Very low requirements. And then from there, we would use the correlation engine in Big Panda to pull in contextual information. So if you gave us a service name or a service ID, we had like unique identifiers for them as well, then we would ping against our CMDB or our service registry, two different systems, and pull in information from those to provide the context. So for us, it was more like, you know, in traditional ops, you say, I don't want to drink from the fire hose because I can't make sense of it. With something like Big Panda, we said, throw the fire hose at it and let's see if we can get the individual drops we need at the times we need them. And that's a complete mental shift from, I would say, like the old school operational mentality where you only want something that's been vetted well. We said, I don't even care if you vetted it, send it in. If it's correlating with something and we have a problem, at least we have a full picture of what's going on. And so that's kind of our approach, but I think different customers or potential customers are in different scenarios where I'm not sure that some people know the value of a platform like Big Panda because they think their observability is subpar. But I think you identify a lot of the data schema issues. If you feed it into Big Panda and you say, well, these things should correlate, right? Because they're related. Then you figure out what the missing piece of the puzzle is and you just go and do that. But specifically, your question was around how do you kind of close the loop into architecture? So I know Satbeer, you're ITIL V2 certified, right? I'm V3. Darren, are you ITIL?
I'm not. Really, okay.
So I joined the ranks. ITIL's a dirty term, but it is the easiest way to visualize it. In ITIL, there's a wheel, right? And in the middle, it just says ITIL. Around that ring or around that bubble, it's got a ring and it says service design, service architecture, service operations, right? Then outside of that, it's your event management, incident management, change and problem. So for me, as an operations guy, I think of closed loop operations. So anything that's an event that becomes an alert, that becomes an incident, should become a problem, should become a change that closes that gap, right? And then more mature organizations will have things like chaos engineering, like let's make sure we fixed it by trying to break it again, right? So we had to implement processes that kind of fed into one another so that we could take it back to engineers and say, here are the problems that were found. Here's why, you know, we had a single point of failure we didn't know about, or we didn't know these two things had, requirements for one another to work properly. But that's kind of how I envisioned it. I'm sure there's other ways to do it. But for me, if it becomes an incident, it's going to a problem process, and then we're going to identify everything that went wrong. And then those go back into the change process. And you either architect something for the service side, you update a runbook, you instrument automation, automatic failover, whatever those things might be. And to the point where, you know, like, I don't even like saying that my team was called a knock at Hulu anyway, because we really tried to be a resiliency operations center. We were the resilience leg for the customers inside the business, right? And that's kind of why I use the ITIL fundamentals when I approach problem solving like this, is because, like, one of the things I got out of ITIL was the only reason you exist as a business with an IT offering that anyone's paying for is because it's valuable. And it's only valuable because it's working. So my job is like, keep it working, you know, whatever that means. Yeah. So that's ultimately kind of how I approached it and the things that we went into to close that loop back to architecture. And sometimes, you know, you did have to bring in architecture review because, you know, I'm an ops guy, I'm not an engineer. So there's nuance to things as well. But partnership is a big piece of it, you know. When I build like my processes, there's four pillars that I generally say I got to cover bare minimum. And it's the people, who's going to do it, the process, how is the workflow going to get to the people that do it, and how does it get back to the engineers if we need them? Then there's the platform, which in this case, we're talking Big Panda, and then partnership. You know, operations doesn't stand on its own. It's got to be able to work with developers, engineers, security, anyone. So you have to have a partnership branch of that as well.
Yeah. Aaron, so that was a lot there, but you mentioned, you know, we talked about architecture, we talked about the NOC or what might be an operational command center, global command center, what have you, depending on what the organization calls it. But all that's evolving in terms of what was the concepts of incident problem change management from ITIL. You have product teams, you have the agile way of doing things. So would you contend that, is there an ideal user, if you will, for Big Panda, or meaning is it the command center, or could it be also SRE teams? Could it be actual product teams and application development teams that are also looking at this? And Big Panda ties it all into together, and because it's taking all these signals, you're throwing the fire hose at it, and it's distilling it down, people all know what the situation would be. And as they need to troubleshoot it, they go to their potential observability tools, start asking questions, et cetera, and things of that nature. So do you see it as a uniform platform or a unifying platform, or do you still see it as best of breed for one particular persona or user group?
It's diverse. I've said this a couple times. I don't know if I'll get in trouble for it, but the limitation is your imagination based on how your business operates, right? Mm-hmm. So there are two things I've run into. People really want to use a platform like that, or people don't want to add another platform into their day-to-day. So for me, I had to solve both use cases. As an example, I had in Big Panda, we had, at least when I left, multiple development teams using it and multiple operations teams. I think there were three operations teams and two development teams. And then we also had some other teams exploring it as a use case. And so on the operation side, it's pretty standard. It's exactly what you would think. We're, you know, looking at the incidents as they come in, things like that. On the development side, they wanted to use it to know how their deployments were going. So, you know, they're like, hey, you guys don't need to worry about this. We got a deployment going out, but they would jump in and look at their environment, we call them, how you slice the data by service or application, something like that. They would look at theirs and see what was flowing in, and it told them how their deployments went, or if they're, you know, post-deployment, if, you know, some of their alerts were firing, they would see it all there and they could go, are we okay with this or not? Based on that, they could do a rollback. So we had some people using it for deployments, for changes, things like that. Yeah, I would say it's all about, you know, how are you operating? I know some of the customers we have don't even use Big Panda in terms of jumping into the UI. They run it headless, feed everything into their ticketing system from there. So they have Big Panda doing backend enrichment, correlation, tagging, things like that. And then once it does all that, they automatically share it to whatever their ticketing system is, and they respond from there. So it really is a diverse platform. It depends on what your use case is and, sure, you know, what the level of effort is to implement it.
Yeah, I was going to go down that path. I was going to ask, do you find that when Big Panda gets implemented that people actually don't pay attention to the individual observability platforms, but instead rush right to Big Panda? And I think you kind of answered it with some of those more advanced scenarios. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's a combo, because for me, it's, you know, you're looking for the fire, right, in Big Panda. And then once you find the fire, you may need to know, is this like an electrical fire, or did this start from, you know, some brush? That's where you would go to whatever that specific tool is, the observability tool, and you would triage from there based on the best signal. So that's kind of the way I see them working together, is Big Panda is going to give me an overview of what's happening, give me the closest signal I can get. And then if I need additional context, I'm going to go into Grafana, Datadog, whatever the other tools are, and I'm going to look for specifics in there.
Yeah. And do you find there's, is there a natural inflection point where somebody should start looking at something like Big Panda? Like we've talked about this as a group, you know, depending on where you are in terms of a need for monitoring versus a need for observability, I think there's value in having an engine like Big Panda. But do you find that there is an inflection point where people say, hey, we've gotten to a point where now it makes sense? And what would that be? What are people looking for to say, now I absolutely have to make this additional investigation and potentially bring on a platform like yours?
Yeah, I would say that there's two mentalities. One is, I'm building something right now for 24/7 operations. I want to have that platform in place ahead of time, so I can skip the chaos of 50 tools being used. That's a really good state to be in if you can get there. My experience is I couldn't get budget till I showed value. So I had to go through the chaos and do it manually before I could say, look, if I had this thing, I could make it easier. You know, I think a lot of the customers that I talk to, they're in constant wartime, is what I would call it. Incidents going on all day, or lasting for many hours if it's not a lot of incidents. And they're just finding ways, like trying to find ways, like how can we get that time reduced, because our customers are starting to go to our competitors for whatever the service is. So that tends to drive it. And then we try and tie value back to the business, right? So we know we can help IT ops, but ultimately, like at least my personal mentality is, operations is almost always a money sink at a company. So as little money as possible and as much value as possible saves the business a lot. And so if you can make that value case, it's, you know, it's you're gonna get what you need. And then the other thing too is, when I was evaluating AI ops tools, there's hidden costs that I think a lot of people don't evaluate, which is, if I need developers to support my AI platform, that's an increased cost than if I can have my frontline incident commanders do it, right? So for me, a big selling point with Big Panda is I could, I don't think you could see it. Yeah, you can't see it in the screen, but I got Jocko Willink's book, Extreme Ownership, back here. And extreme ownership was something that I really wanted to take on, because at previous rollouts of tools, I always had to work with a tooling team. And so they're supporting many, many tools, right? So when I was looking at Big Panda, I said, I don't want my observability team to manage and own this. And they were like, yeah, we also don't want that. So I was like, cool. Partnership is going the right way. So what I said is, here are the steps I need you to implement on each of the tools that you own. And then we will maintain the operational platform. And if there's any custom tagging we need, we will get it done through our platform, or we'll tie into the orchestration system and we'll get those tags added automatically every time you deploy. So we kind of took a different approach, but yeah, it saved us developer costs. When I said I was on open source Alerta, I think I had 3 developers supporting the build out of that initially. And evaluating Big Panda, it's like, if these guys can build what I need from Alerta's open source, they're way better off supporting the actual business products than they are supporting me, because I'm a money sink. So let's have Big Panda do all the development of AI ops and all that, and then we'll manage the front end and the tagging. So that was kind of the approach I took, because I didn't want to have to go through another team, because like, I don't like low velocity change. I'm a very high velocity person, and I hire people that are that way. So it's like, if we hear about the problem, let's go solve it. Let's not drop it in a backlog and wait for 3 months and then have someone pick it up. So that was a big selling point for me, and giving, you know, really good developers back to the business and their salaries back to the business. So,
wow. Yeah. I like that for a lot of reasons too, because we often get into debates of what should be centralized, what should be decentralized. You kind of drew a really interesting line there, which is, this is a perfect function for a platform engineering team. You can take that on. Whereas observability tools always gets into a discussion of, hey, should these tools be run by these teams? Because product teams now have a lot of that budget. They want to sometimes express and run their own platform and tooling. Whereas which functions, or when do we start to look at some of these disparate tools that these teams are using and start to make leverage-based discussions around, well, when should platform engineering maybe pull this one in now? And we'll manage it. Mm-hmm. Whereas what you've just described is, this is a very natural place to have a centralized team focus, and maybe even decentralize some of the observability elements that the product team can elect to own if they should, you know, so choose. So I think that's really interesting. But then I almost want to talk about, I'm just curious about this, to get closer to those development communities. You obviously have a platform that can really give them back their engineering cycles. And I know you and I have talked about the value of those engineering cycles. Do you get into, like, we've seen some really cool stuff in observability in general, where you can do things like trace-based testing, where we can start to express all of the telemetry signals that could be emitted in these transactions upfront as part of the development process. And I imagine as these transactions get more and more complex, I imagine you have a role that you could play in a testing scenario even before something gets deployed. I don't know if that's true, but do you have folks that are tying Big Panda into some of those upfront discussions as they get more and more sophisticated with testing transactions, making sure the right signals are being emitted, and ensuring that when this thing goes live, we have the signals, we have the correlation, we have the tie-ins, and we know that up front. Is that a kind of a pattern that's starting to emerge, or not quite yet?
I would say that if I'm following what you're asking, an example would be at 2 different places we had AI ops tools, and what we would do is we would hear that, you know, hey, this team is load testing their service, or we're doing end-to-end load testing, and I want to know how things fail. So I assume it's going to go well and we don't fail. But if we do, it's very, very nice to know that if you're the frontline incident commander. It's nice to know how a fire spreads, you know. And so we would use it for that. We would know, hey, all these alerts we can ignore. But it's a great story to look at to know, hey, if we see this signal, here's some other likely signals that could happen later on. So we did it kind of that way as a manual thing. It wasn't operationalized. Like, developers didn't know we were watching their load tests and judging their signals. but it did help us. And then what that allows you to do is ahead of a major event, let's say you're a company that's retail and you got a Black Friday deal and you're expecting huge traffic. Well, knowing how you fail during load tests helps you for those scenarios because you can plan for it ahead of time. And then there's something I like to do. If you can get out of the wartime firefighting, you can do war gaming, where you create scenarios and you walk the developers through it as well, right? So I think what some people forget is everyone's operations during those stuff hitting the fan times. So yeah, you're a software developer, but right now you're an ops guy, you know, because the thing's broken. So we actually use those scenarios to create stories for wargaming at certain places I was at ahead of our major events. So it's like, hey, we saw this thing in the last year, or during load testing, we saw this type of failure. Let's figure out if y'all know how to respond to it, you know, or if my team knows how to respond to it, because maybe our runbooks are wrong. And so we would put teams through that, you know, kind of like a 4-hour day type of thing. And that's kind of how we leveraged it. But yeah, I mean, if you're looking at the signals coming in during anything that's important to you, it'll start identifying the story of how your systems operate together.
Yeah. Aaron, could you comment a bit about, you know, you've heard the term alert fatigue and all those things, right?
Yeah.
And so obviously Big Panda is meant to alleviate some of that fatigue, right? Or all that by tying in meaningful signals, and you know where to look and how to look, et cetera. And then the other kind of associated aspect from traditional monitoring or operational teams is, well, look, it's garbage in, garbage out. My CMDB is not, you know, up to snuff. So it doesn't really matter what correlation we do on top of anything. And however we minimize all the alerts, well, I don't know what it's referencing because my CMDB is not exactly up to snuff. So how does this all play out in your view in terms of where things have matured?
So I would say I was at a place before where I absolutely needed the CMDB to be relatively good, whatever that means, you know. I've never seen anyone not working on a CMDB project. So if anyone's figured that out, that's great.
Yeah.
My experience with Big Panda is what we did is we had sources of what Stephen Colbert would say, truthiness, right? So we had certain service information housed somewhere. We had security information housed somewhere else. We had system information in another place. We tried to push all of that from those sources of truthiness into a CMDB. So we didn't have to build it, right? It's like the place where the truthiness exists, that's the thing to feed into the CMDB. The other way I've seen people do it is just create the enrichment off of multiple sources. So instead of having a flat kind of CMDB file like I had, they would have maybe 5 or 6 of them with different keys that would pull in information from different places. So I guess what I would say there is if the information exists somewhere and there's a way someone would get there manually, there's probably a way to enrich it based off of whatever that manual rule set is.
Okay. And if we talk about now implementing or deploying Big Panda, what's the methodology? What's the approach for organizations to go ahead and deploy this? So, you know, like we mentioned in terms of getting this, you install the product, you need these places of truthfulness or and start feeding the CMDB, and CMDB and all of these things need to be correlated somehow, right? Or integrated. What's the approach? How would you best suggest an organization deploy Big Panda?
Well, and who do you go to first? Like, who tends to be the most receptive as you walk up and say, hey, we know this can give you value? Which group do you really focus on maybe as a starting point? And maybe that's a little too broad. Like maybe it has to do with your connections to the company, where the company is in terms of maturity and adoption and some of their pain. But what do you find most often as well? I'd love to know both of those things together, practically speaking.
Yeah, I would say depending on our relationship as a company to other companies, we may start at different places, but where the product resonates the most, in my experience, is it's going to be three different teams. It's going to be your frontline responders who are always underwater when they're coming to us, right? Then it's going to be your engineers if you can help them see how they'll get time back, right? Sometimes you're going to give time back to an engineering team because you're not shotgun blasting your incident command. You're only going to one team now and not five teams, which gives them time back for their sprint cycle, as an example. And then in some cases, depending on the type of business and how underwater they are with their incidents and all that, we resonate with the business side. So the people trying to save money, trying to improve availability and uptime. So it's really which team are we talking about and what's the value they see. But we touch a lot of parts of the business that they seem to see value in. And I would agree that the value is there.
Yeah, I find it's interesting because if you find a team that has a whole ton of tools they're using and you say, oh, that's probably prime for putting in something like Big Panda. And then you start asking questions like, hey, how long does it take you to get to X, MTTR, whatever your signals are that you're measuring? Oftentimes they're the ones that don't have the maturity to be able to answer that. And so I don't know if there's a, hey, we know you're a great place to start. We express the value, and then we can do something very, very focused for you as a product team, or maybe it's starting with the SRE, whatever that makes sense. Can we put in a POV that is fairly easy to stand up? Or do we say, look, it's only as good as all these other sources. You don't have maybe certain things defined, which if you don't have it defined, I don't know that we can show the value of improvement. Like, what are kind of the bare minimums you need to be able to demonstrate value in the first place? And then how can you keep the edges fairly tight so that you can get something in, you can get it deployed, and you can get people kind of weighing in on it?
Yeah, so one of the things I think Big Panda does very well, and I'm speaking for other teams now because I'm still kind of the new guy in the sales side, but what they do really well is partner with every business, at least that I've seen. And in my experience, that's what they did as well. So our POV process, if you're looking for an AIOps tool, it's very robust in the sense that we meet with all of those teams I just mentioned, sometimes even more than that. We'll meet with developers, engineers, incident command, CTOs, directors, doesn't matter, whoever wants to talk to us. And we try and identify what their specific pain is, because again, it's different depending on the vertical. Then from there, we figure out what their use cases are for improvement. Do they need us to just ingest a bunch of stuff and then help them? Or are they looking to do some sort of data schema before they use us? Or, you know, like, what are the use cases? I think the product one's interesting because at a company I was at, I worked very close with product. And if you can tie incidents to which part of the customer experience it's affecting, that's going to give your product team a better way to prioritize those functional improvements, right? And so as an example, if you have a login system and you have a shopping cart and maybe you have some sort of partner program, an affiliate program, each one of those is going to have different possible services behind it. And so categorizing for a product team based on those services and customer functions, I think, is a really good use case. I didn't actually get to the point where I could implement that, but we were very, very close at the tail end of when I was there because of that value of you have this massive product backlog. And it's like, what's the thing that's painful for our customers the most? That's a different way to look at it versus what do we think we should work on next, you know?
Yeah, and one more question on this. So one of the reasons we love talking to AJ is that you've been there, done that. You've done some really, really cool things with it. And I think you got fairly sophisticated with auto remediation. And can you walk us through what does a maturity look like when you put in Big Panda? You're starting at a point, and you're of course looking to continuous process improvement, et cetera. What are some of the things that you were maybe able to achieve with Big Panda, and what are some of your other customers able to achieve in terms of really closing the gap with some automated responses and just really tightening up MTTR and some other values? What were you able to get through as a practitioner?
Yeah, so this is what I call peacetime wartime. So as you reduce wartime, you increase peacetime. And a lot of companies go, okay, well, now what do I do? Do I cut staff or what are we doing now? If people are just sitting around, right? Because the wartime is gone. So what my team and I did is we did an exercise way before we even had an AIOps tool. And we said, if we can get this company out of the firefighting, what do we collectively want to work on? So I hire teams with different skill sets. Everyone's an incident commander. And then I hire people who might be a junior software developer, someone who might be a network engineer, sysadmin, security guy. I like to have a diverse set of people on my team in terms of what their subject matter expertise is, so that we, any incident, we can have someone in the room that we know knows a little bit about it, you know? And essentially because of that, everyone had different things they wanted to work on. So they're like, oh, I want to make network changes, or I want to do security policy updates or whatever. And so we said, okay, if we get there, let's figure out how we can partner with those teams and bring some of that in. So that's kind of where we started, right? Is we had a problem where wartime was killing teams, but also their day-to-day, right? So you have X number of hours in your sprint, but you're the CI/CD pipeline team and someone has a problem with a deployment and they come to you, and now that's unplanned work, right? So we said, let's try and help take the low-hanging fruit off of their plate. Let's do some run the business work is what I call it. You know, there's a problem with the CI/CD pipeline. Send that to my team first. We'll troubleshoot it. And then if we get to a point where we no longer have the either something documented in the run book or the knowledge, then we'll escalate to that engineering team to reduce their triage time and time spent on it. So that was the first thing that we did. And I think that's invaluable. Our network team saved about 40% of their time when we took over some of the run the business work, doing just basic network troubleshooting in the cloud or in the data center. And then we took another approach, which was I had a guy on my team who was just like, automate the world, right? He wanted to automate his shoes going on in the morning. So I said, okay, let's think about how we can automate stuff. I'm a very skeptical person. So I said, I don't trust automation first. So I'm approaching it from that perspective, is I think automation is going to fail first and then we'll get mature at it. So we focused on automation on non-critical systems, or things that we were doing every day that were non-critical and repeatable. So when I say non-critical system, let's say you have an in-house built data graphing system, something like that, you know, where you can see error counts in a graphical view time series. That's like a non-critical system. It's not affecting customers. It may affect your ability to get data like right now if it's not up, but it's no one's paying for that, right? So we said, let's start with that system because this thing's going down a lot. And it's the same set of errors, and we're doing the same set of triage every time. And then based on the results of our triage, we're taking the same actions every time. So we have, or at both companies, I had an engineering team, but one of the companies I was at dedicated two engineers to operations, which is why we kind of say we were resiliency operations, because we had an engineering leg to help us with some of that. So we just gave them our run book. And, you know, from Big Panda, we would say, if this alert comes in, share it from Big Panda to another system that has the custom scripts in it, and then just have that take the actions. And then if there's an unexpected result or a failure, kick an alert to Big Panda telling us that that process executed and it's now failed, and we'll go investigate that manually. So that's kind of what our approach was. And then as we were taking more and more actions that were non-critical, repeatable, we just started funneling that over to our team that would automate it and, you know, test it from there and go. So those are the types of things that we did, is run the business work and then automated anything we were doing regularly. So, and that mentality came from a place where I was in a job before where a team would be like, hey, can you guys take this thing over and we'll come back and automate it, you know, when we have time. And they would never come back and automate it. So going back to that extreme ownership, as I said, I need to have either a partnership with someone who can, or I need to hire somebody that can do it. And so that's kind of how we took ownership of automation from the operation side anyway.
Yeah. Maybe one last question, and there's no right answer to this, and you covered a lot of ground right now, Aaron. But if an organization is, maybe there's a little bit of peacetime here and they're saying, okay, look, we know there's wartime's right around the corner, or is always going on, if you will. We have an opportunity to affect a observability strategy, right? So that, how, where does Big Panda fit into an observability strategy? Does it come in later? Should they establish an operating model first? Should they, or where do you think that Big Panda should insert itself? And I'm sure there's no right answer because it depends on the organization, yeah, right? But just your view of it.
So my personal view is I don't worry about platforms or tools until I have a theoretical process whiteboarded and I know who's going to receive the end state of that, right? So at least planning wise, I would plan on, you know, what is the process from from, you know, we hear about something to somebody's responding. What should that process theoretically look like in my end state? And then from there, who's going to do it? So if you're in a DevOps model, maybe it's more distributed, so you implement differently. If you like central command like I do for wartime, then it'll be something different. But I think once you have those two things at least whiteboarded and outlined, then you can think, okay, now what's going to get those things from mm-hmm. signal to responder? And that's the platform piece. So I honestly think that if you're looking at observability right now, you're doing yourself a disservice if you're not looking at something that will help your first responders make sense of the observability. And then one thing I didn't mention yet, but another key component when I was looking at AI ops tools, something that Big Panda went out on was their tool agnosticism. So they've got, you know, tons of out-of-box integrations, but then some very easy to use REST APIs. And so a problem some companies have, I've seen this more in large companies, is you go from one CTO, they bring in a new CTO, and that guy's got a relationship with Splunk. And now he goes, we're ripping out Elk Stack and we're putting in Splunk, right? Your ability as ops to pivot is really difficult with some tools because it's a lot of work to get off the ground and you may have to use someone else to do it. I told you about the observability team I worked with. It was a line in the sand. I would go into Big Panda, create the endpoint for them. It's like two clicks. You know, I think I had to type in a name too into a text box. And then my site is done. I kick them over the steps that they need to execute in like a Jira ticket or whatever their workflow is. And then it takes them 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You know, if it's a in-house built tool, it might take longer because there's a lot more custom code. But the ability to pivot quickly, the same way, you know, some of these tools get ousted from a company and a new one brought in, I had to be as agile as they were going to be with their decision making. And that's where Big Panda really helped, was I can get this stuff up and running. Then it's on them to get plugged in with the steps I give them. So that's their timeline, but my side's done. So operationally, we're good. And then they just got to plug in for the observability side. And then we've got our full workflow again. Yeah. So that was a big piece as well, was being able to not care about what tool someone went with.
I like it.
Yeah. So if AJ, I think the one thing that's clear is to our millions of viewers, I think it's very clear that your experience really, really makes sense and connects all of this together via really practical and pragmatic pathways. So we appreciate you for coming on. We're a big fan of Big Panda. We like to circulate your capabilities early in the discussion with our partners or our customers that are going down this path. So we always appreciate you. Thanks for spending time with us today. And I'm sure you won't mind if our millions of people kind of start pinging you directly, but you're a great add to Big Panda. And thanks for your time today.
Yeah.
Thank you. And yeah, feel free to reach out to me. I'm an open book and I'm a total nerd, so I'll probably talk.